Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama's Kuf Beis. We're on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis. We are halfway down a short Amud at the two dots. We're starting with the words Rav Rami. We are going to go through more discussion regarding Milsa Chazusa, Milsa Lav Chazusa. Yesterday's daf predicated itself around when we talk about coloring. So is coloring significant or it's not significant? In other words, when you introduce color into an item, so is that color something which halachically is viewed as something abstract and it's not tangible, it's not concrete? Or maybe no. Maybe coloring is something which is abstract, tangible, and concrete. What would be the difference between how we look at coloring? So it makes a huge difference. The Gemara gave numerous examples. Let's say, as a simple example, you have something which is Asr Bahana, and you introduce the Asr Hana into an item via coloring. Take Paris of Arla and use the coloring, extract the coloring from the Paris Arla and introduce it into clothing. So that clothing now, is it going to be Asr Bahana or is it not going to be Asr Bahana? Okay, very good. So here we have a rock solid example of a difference whether in terms of how we look at it. If we look at coloring, which is something abstract and not something substantial, so then the clothing does not need to be destroyed. On the other hand, if we're looking at coloring, which is something which is concrete, so then you have to destroy the clothing. Okay, so this is the discussion that we had yesterday in terms of whether chazusa milsa or lav milsahi, and we had a lot of discussion on this topic in the world of peros, peros arla, peros shvius. And we also discussed a little bit even in terms of the Dam of Tumas Meis. Rav Rami. So now with all that stated as just a backdrop to our discussion, we are here on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis with the following. Rav notes that there's a stira between two Mishnayos. So first we're going to start with a Mishnah. Mishnah here is in Shvius in the beginning of the seventh parak of Shvius. So Mimin Atzovim. So let's say we are talking about Paris that grew during the Shemitah year, right? Any Paris that grew during the Shemitah year are going to have Kedusha Shvius. Okay, just as a quick recap, refresher, in terms of Paris Shvius, that means that fruit that grows during the Shemitah year, a lot of the produce is not going to grow unless you plant it. But we know when it comes to fruits, for example, and other vegetations as well, otherwise known as fichim, but when it comes to fruits, so fruit's going to come annually, regardless of whether or not you do any work in the field, you don't do work in the field. Fine. So you have all this fruit that grows during the Shemitah year. So that the fruit that grows during the Shemitah year have what's called Kedushas Shvius. They have sanctity. What do I do with that fruit? So what you could do with it is you could eat it. Not only can you eat it, there's a mitzvah to eat it as well. Rishonim discussed a deliberate debate in terms of how strong a mitzvah are we talking about. In other words, is it an allowance? Is it a mitzvah? Regardless, Peiros Shvius are eaten, but that's it. You can't do anything else with the Peiros Shvius. You can't do commerce with it. And on top of that, they also have an expiration date, otherwise known as Shas Habir. Shas Habir means that it comes a point in time where the produce is no longer found in the field. What you have to do is you have to destroy the fruit. Now, I say destroy the fruit. It's also Machlokas Rishonim. But again, just to make life simple for us, I'll say it simply. You have to destroy the fruit after the Shas Habir. So, Mimin Atzovim. When we're talking about fruit that's going to be used for dyeing, Sfiche, Satim, Vikotze, Yeshlem Shvius, Ledemeim Shvius, Yeshlem Beer, Uledemeim Beer. So the Mishnah tells us that they're subject to beer. In other words, once we get to the Shasa Beer in the year, so then you're going to have to destroy it. Okay. And again, there's other ways to say the Mishnah. I'll say it as simply as I can. So Amaitim Yeshlem Mishim Kedusha Shvius. So what do we see over here? That the Eitim have Kedusha Shvius, meaning that over here, the items that were identified were not necessarily fruit. Meaning, I misled us a little bit in describing them as fruit. They're not exactly fruit. The katsim, the kotsim, those are more vegetation than it is the actual fruit itself. And meanwhile, they're subject to Kedusha Shvius. Uriminu alei kanim v'alei gefanim shegiva b'chava p'nei asadam. Alikten la'achili yishmei mishim Kedusha Shvius. Leitzim, eimei mishim Kedusha Shvius. And meanwhile, what do we have? We have a brice. We learned this brice back in Sukkah. And that is, we're talking about soft shoots. Soft shoots that some people eat or some animals eat and some don't. And so it's ambiguous whether or not it's going to be collected for firewood or whether it's going to be collected for eating. And the brice that tells us in Sukkah, it depends on how why I'm collecting them. If I'm collecting them for eating, so then they're subject to Kedusha Shvius. If I'm collecting them for firewood, so then they're not subject to Kedusha Shvius. Okay, so Mishani. So the Gemara says, okay, so in terms of resolving the discrepancy, meaning is vegetation, non-edible vegetation, meaning a wood basically, so is it going to be subject to Kedusha Shviya? So the resolution of the Gemara is very simple, and that, not very simple, but a straightforward resolution, and that is that it depends what its usage is going to be for. If its usage is going to be for, let's say, for example, firewood, so then it's not going to be subject to Kedusha Shviyas. Why? Because firewood has the following characteristic. In other words, when I'm using firewood for cooking, let's say, for example, so what do I do? So what I do is I take the firewood, I burn it, now I make coal out of it. And then what do? I cook over the coal. Ah. So you see over here, the biur, its destruction, and the hana are not coming at the same time. In order for Peyroshvi is to be properly consumed and properly used, I need something where the biur and the hana come at the same time. Okay, it's based on psukim, it's based on drashas. Anyway, I need the biur and the hana to be coming at the same time. So when I'm collecting it as firewood, so and the biur and the hana are not coming at the same time, as I just got done explaining, so then it's not going to be subject to Kedusha Shvius. On the other hand, when we're talking about collecting it so that we're going to be dyeing and coloring it, the dyeing and coloring it, the destruction and the hana are coming at the same time. Therefore, it is subject to Peyur Shvius. What about wood that we're not using for cooking, but wood we're using for illumination? So over there, when I'm burning the wood for illumination, so the benefit and the destruction are coming simultaneously. So over there, so if I'm going ahead and collecting shvius wood for illumination purposes, based on the guidelines that we were just given, based on the model we were just given, the biur and the hana are coming simultaneously. Therefore, it should be subject to Kedusha Shvius. Amar Rav, we're on the top of Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. Sameitim la'saka hinomdim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not typical. That's not the general reason in which why we're collecting wood. We're collecting wood for cooking, not for illumination. And so therefore, stam eitzim, we're going to go with the default setting of why wood is collected. And even if you happen to be somebody collecting it for a different reason, we go to the default setting. Default setting of wood is that it's used for cooking. Again, for wood and cooking, the burning of the wood and the using it for its heat. So the biur and the hana are not coming at the same time. Therefore, not subject to Kedusha Shvius. Look at the top Rashi on Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. Stam Eitzim La'Sakan Ninu V'Lo La'Ha'ir. Hilkach Eitzim Ninu Mikara Lo'Chai Elai Shvius Aval Svichi Satim Stam Amud Tzviya. Rashi points out over here. So now this is going to make the distinction between wood and the katsim that we just described in the previous Mishnah in Shvius. When it comes to wood, generically, typically, wood is going to be collected for cooking, and even though I may end up cooking collecting it for a different reason, it don't matter. Meanwhile, the satim that we described previously in that Mishnah Shvius, so it is typically collected for coloring, and therefore the beer and the hana are coming at the same time. Rashi continues, Hilka chalai kedusha vasiolach rabir afla hesek. Valakanim bugufanim yesha ochlem osam v'yesha masikin osam. Hilka chbasar machshav alikita tan azlinan. When it comes to the alekanim alegufanim, so over there is no default setting. So then it's going to be a function of, a predicate of, why the person is picking it. Amrav Kahana. Okay, good. We're in Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, and admittedly, we just went on a sidetrack regarding some of the rules regarding Kedusha Shvius. When does it have Kedusha Shvius, when it doesn't? Fruit, obviously, that grows during the Shemitah year has Kedusha Shvius. But now we're talking about non-fruit growth. Are they going to have Kedusha Shvius? So the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no, depending on the criteria in which we just went through. Amar Rav Kahana v'Eitzim La'Asaka Tanaihi. Okay, now, Eitzim La'Asaka. This idea that the default setting of why I collect wood and the fact that most people are using it for fuel to cook, so and it doesn't matter now if somebody else decides that he's going to be picking it for a different reason, collecting it for a different reason, i.e. illumination. In other words, his thought will be negated and nullified based on what is typically done. So what Rav Kahana points out is that not everyone's in agreement to this. The Tanya in Mosim Per Shvius Lo La Mishra Velo La Kvusa Rav Yosi Omer. Nosim Per Shvius La Soch Ha Mishra U La Soch Ha Kvusa. So the so when it comes to the fruit of Shvius, so what you can't do is you can't use it to soak your flax. You can use it for laundering. According to Rav Yosi, you could use it to soak your flax. You could use it to soak your flax, and you could use it for laundry as well. So in my time at the Rabbanan, the Amakra, Alachla v'lo l'mishra, Alachla v'lo l'kvusa. So as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, so the position of the Tanakhama is so easy to defend. Why? Because when the Torah describes Peir Shvius, the Torah says you have to eat it, la'achla, which means that the only thing you could be doing with it is eating it, and you can't do other activities with it. You can't soak flax with it. You can't launder with it. And Rabbi Yossi Amar, Amakra lachem, l'chol tarchechem. And what Rav Yossi will tell you is that, no, it's yours. And yours, and you can do with it whatever you want. Now, obviously, over here, we're straddling two expressions of the Torah when describing Peir Shvius that are odds with one another. Meaning, la'achla is extraordinarily limited. Lachem is extraordinarily expansive. So, in other words, which one are we going to be focusing on? The la'achla or the lachem? So, my time at the Rabbanan, I just read that, sorry, Rabbanan, my nami haksiv lachem. So, good. And now what the Gemara is going to do is the Gemara is going to try to balance, meaning that each Tana knows that there are two expressions used in describing Peir Shvius, so why focus on one over the other? What do the Chachamim do with Lachem? So, Dumya delachla, b'misha naso v'yirosha v'nyatsu mishra v'kvusa, shanaso achar b'yuran. Ah, so what the Chachamim will tell you is that I'll tell you what I do with the word lachla. Achla is a template. It tells me, when does something have Kedusha Shvius? When do Peir Shvius have Kedusha Shvius? When its consumption and its destruction are occurring simultaneously, i.e. eating. Anything that follows that model is going to be subject to Peir Shvius. When it comes to Mishra Kvusa, when it comes to soaking and laundering, so the destruction and the Hana are not coming at the same time. The Gemara's assumption is that just from a chemical standpoint, so when I'm soaking and when I'm laundering, so basically the fruit, the chemical properties of the fruit break down first, and then the cleaning or the effects of the soaking occur later. Okay, it just basic assumptions the Gemara is making going into this discussion, and so since it doesn't follow the model of eating where Hana and Bira are coming simultaneously, so therefore it's not going to be subjected to Kedusha Shvius. And by the way, really, our Gemara is making even another point as well, right? To try to clear this as well as I can. Meaning, and it, even for Peir Shvius, you will not be allowed to use it in that manner because Bira and Hana are coming, not coming at the same time. Meaning, Bira and Hana coming at the same time really does two things. Number one, it informs us in terms of when it's going to have Kedusha Shvius. And number two, it's going to tell us what is proper usage and what is not proper usage. Okay. So, so that is the shita of the Chachamim. Now, what about Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi, name aksiv la'achla. So now, what about Rabbi Yossi, where he's focusing on lachem? What does lachem tell me? The fruit's yours. You can do with it whatever you want. Meaning, he's really focusing on the more expansive term of the pasuk. What will Rabbi Yossi be doing with the limitation of la'achla? So I'm lacha who mi by lelicha detanya detanya la'achla v'lalemalugla. So what he's going to do with it is understand that la'achla is going to be just a little limitation. Notably, what I can't do with the fruit is I can't use it medicinally. In other words, what fruit normally is done is that you eat the fruit. Rarely do people use it medicinally. Now, please don't ask me because I don't know. In other words, what is going to be the medicinal use of the fruit? Not holding by their medicine. Barely holding by today's medicine. So I don't know. But in other words, but the point is, however, is that you can use Peir Shvius for its standard usage. But to use it for something obscure, like using fruit for medicine, it's an obscure usage, and that you can't do with Peir Shvius. It goes without saying, by the way, if I could just state the obvious. Obviously, if the medicinal benefit is going to be something which is going to save the person's life, so then obviously you could do it. It just simply means that for standard usage of Peir Shvius, So you can only do it for eating. You can't do it for medicinal purposes. And to which the Gemara now says, and I'll tell you why it is that according to Rabbi Yossi, why we're more ready to include laundering as opposed to melugma. When it comes to laundering, so it is shavu l'chol nefesh. Meaning, who likes laundered clothing? The answer is everybody. Everybody likes laundered clothing. It's, right, in other words, that's something which is shavu l'chol adam, is shavu l'chol nefesh. On the other hand, when it comes to medicinal purposes, so medicinal purposes are not shavu l'chol nefesh. This is an interesting one. Meaning, it's not shavu l'chol nefesh. Why? Because not everyone's sick. In other words, Baruch Hashem, most people are healthy, and some people are sick. So right now, using it as melugma, as medicinal, as its medicinal value, so that's something which is not shav l'chol nefesh, and as a result of that, you are not going to be allowed to use it because it's not shav l'chol nefesh. But kvusa, but laundering is shav l'chol nefesh. Okay. Good. Kamar azlahad d'tanya. Okay, so we're on a tangent from the beginning of this morning, right? Where we are right now, nearing the midpoint of Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. So really, we're on a tangent. In other words, we launched into a tangential discussion regarding what perish fruit can be used for, what it can be used for, and what can it not be used for. And we got to this point in time. This really has nothing to do with Baba Kama right now. But we got to this point in time because yesterday's daf, we touched the idea of what do I do with chazusa? Meaning that if I have the coloring of perish shvi'is that goes into an article of clothing, does it need to be removed? Does it not need to be removed in the shas habir? So as long as we were on the topic of perish shvi'is, so the Gemara now is launched into this discussion of what fruit are eligible for perish shvi'is, meaning all fruit, sorry. What non-fruit growth is eligible for perish shvi'is? So we dealt with that. And then when we have perishvius, what can I do with the perishvius? I certainly can eat it. What can I do beyond eating it? Machlokis between the Tanakhama and Rav Yossi. Tanakhama is focusing on la'achla. Effectively, the only thing you can do with it is eat it and nothing else. And according to Rav Yossi, slightly more expansive. I can eat it and do all benefit activities, provided that the destruction and the hana come at the same time, and provided that shev l'chol nefesh. So far, so good. Kamazad de Tanya, we have the following brisa, lach lav lo lemulugma, lach lav lo lezilof. So lach lav lo sos me mehem apiktivizin. It's a hard word. And kaman karebi osi, di karabani, kanami, mishar kvusa. Okay. So over here now, the brisa tells us that here are your limitations. Here's what I can't do with perishvias. So I can't use it for medicinal purposes. I can't use it for zilof. Taking the wine and sprinkling in a house, providing a good aroma, good fragrance in the house. And finally, I should have quit after the first time. Apiktivizin. Basically, it's epikak. Okay, in other words, it was some fruit, which basically induced vomiting immediately. So a person needs to vomit for whatever reason. So back in the good old days, right, I remember my parents having epikak in the house. Okay, nowadays it's not recommended. But if I want to use the fruit for those purposes, it's such an unusual purpose, you can't use perishvias for that purpose. So over here, basically, what are we learning in this brisa? Perishvias cannot be used for these really wild activities. Wild meaning they're not normative activities. So who subscribed to that? Rabbi Yossi. Meaning, why do I know it's Rabbi Yossi? Because according to the Chachamim, what can't I do with perishvias? Basically, I can't do anything with perishvias. According to the Chachamim, the only thing you could do with perishvias is to eat it. You can't do anything else with it. So lefishitas Chachamim. So the list of things you can't do with perishvias would be an extraordinarily longer list, which would be basically including any and all activity outside of eating. By virtue of the fact that this price over here is just picking. Well, I can't use it for medicine, and I can't use it to induce vomiting, and these are really like off-the-board activities. That's Rabbi Yossi Shita. Good. Adkan. Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, right in the middle of the Amud. Okay, and we're back to Baba Kama. Rabbi Yehuda Amri, Meshavach Yoser, V'chulei. Okay, we go back to our Mishnah. What happens in the Mishnah that I gave the dyer, D-Y-E-R, I gave the dyer some wool to dye, and my instructions were very clear. I want it black, and then he returns it to me and he dyed it red. So proud of his work. And meanwhile, of course, I'm looking at him and I'm like, did you see the instructions, right? I verbalized them. I wrote them down. I was so clear. And meanwhile, you deviated from my instructions. So under those circumstances, what happened? So in the mission, we had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in terms of what to do. So according to Rabbi Meir, remember back in the mission, Rabbi Meir says, what does the dyer now need to do? Replace the value of the wool. Why replace the value of the wool? He was kone b'shinui, meaning that he deviated from my instructions. He dyed it black when I said red, or alternatively, he dyed it red when I said black. That is a shinui, it's a deviation from my instructions. He was kone b'shinui. Halach will treat him like a gazlan. Obviously, it was unintentional, right? Remember earlier in the Pesachta, we talked about, give me an example of unintentional gzela right here, right? The dyer did not intend to steal it, but because he deviated from the instructions so effectively now, he changed it, acquired it via change. And now what he has to do is he has to replace you with the wool, but only the raw material wool that you gave him. That was Shitas Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. The Chachamim were more upset and felt that this deviation deserves a penalty. What's the penalty? The penalty is that he's not going to be kone b'shinui, but rather what you're going to be able to do is that you're going to be able to take back the wool, albeit now it's dyed, so it's greater in value. So what you'll do now is that you're going to give the dyer either the expenses, that's the yitziah, or the shevach, or the improved value, the increase in value price because it's dyed, whichever of those two numbers are lower. But he has not acquired it via shinui, that cheats Rabbi Yehuda. Good. Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, Achor, de Rabbi Abba, Kameh, de Rav Huna, v'yasef, Rav Huna, v'kam halacha k'Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, v'alacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, and the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, hopefully at this point in time, you're wondering, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, I never heard of him. Well, that's not true. We've all heard of him. In other words, but contextually, where has he come up recently in Baba Kama? You're wondering? Good. I'm glad you're wondering, by the way, because he has not come up here recently in Baba Kama. Obviously, this reference to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha is regarding a different halacha, which we're going to introduce ourselves to momentarily. Okay. But the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and not like Rabbi Meir of our Mishnah. So, Adjun Rav Yosef Lape. So now, as Rav Yosef is hearing this, meaning other Amoraim deciding and determining what the halacha is like. So Rav Yosef turns around. Ajun Rav Yosef la'apeh. And gave him a look. In other words, not in agreement, not on board with your psak. Amar. Bishlam Rav Yosef mekarche yitzirich sakadat chamina. Yachiv rabim halacha rabim kamashman halacha kiyachid. The fact that you paskin like Rav Yosef ben Karcha. So on that one, I'm not upset with. Meaning, you need to paskin like Rav Yosef ben Karcha. Because Rav Yeshua ben Karcha is a shitas yachid, arguing with the rabbim, and had you not paskined, had you not publicly declared that the halacha is like Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, everyone would have obviously assumed that the halacha is like the chachamim. Okay, great talk. Who's Rav Yeshua ben Karcha? What context are we talking about? Next point to the Gemara, Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, mahi. So Ditanya, so we have the following brisa, Rav Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Milva b'shtayin Ephraimem, Milva apen Ephraimem, imneshu kematzel miyadam. Okay, we are looking right now at the very first sugya of Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah, five prakim of, tucked away here, Avodah Zarah, we're doing it later in Seder Nezikin. Okay, good. So Avodah Zarah dedicated to the topic of basically how to deal with Goyim. And idolatry, all right? Both topics. So the very first, and by the way, they intersect. The very first sugya of Avodah Zarah, which is what we're looking at over here, the intersection of how to deal with Goyim and Avodah Zarah. What's the issue? The issue is that they have their holidays, and I know we're looking at modern modern religions. I say modern religions, I mean religions of the last couple millennia. So the Gemara is not really writing about those religions. The Gemara is writing about other religions. Right, religions that existed in Bavel circa 2nd, 3rd century, religions even outside of religions in Israel in that time period, So the religions that we look at today that have predominantly taken over the world, right? Islam and Christianity, those are not the religions that they were referring to. Other religions. Anyway, right? The Christianity started at that point in time, but it was not by any stretch of the imagination a popular religion, right? That's only later with the Roman Empire. Anyway, sorry for the crash course in history. But there were idolatrous religions at the time, and they had their holidays, right? Every religion's got their holidays. They had their holidays, and what happened by their holidays is they got very religious. Okay, and what the concern is, what the problem is that if you deal with them in any kind of business around their holiday time, right? The first mission of Avodah Zarah talks about 3 days prior to the holiday. So what's going to happen now is that's a point in time when they're very religious, and what they're going to do is that they're going to acknowledge their gods, lowercase g, to that which they just received. And what you're going to basically be doing is aiding and abetting in their practice of idolatry. Okay? That's the first thing you have Avodah Zarah. And so what you have to do is that you have to limit or curtail the kind of business you're going to be doing with an idolater prior to their holiday. Okay, 3 days prior to the holiday. Good. Rabbi Yishuv Mekarcha says, okay, for the most part, I agree, except when it comes to loans that are undocumented. Undocumented loans. So you're going to go ahead and you're going to go collect your undocumented loans, even if it's proximate to their holidays. Why? Because it's kematzuhu miyadam. These loans are undocumented. Meaning today they feel, right, their moral conscience has got the best of them. Today they feel like they need to pay that loan. Who knows what tomorrow's going to bring? So what you need to do is that if you have a moment where they are ready to pay and it's an undocumented loan, you take advantage of that moment, because tomorrow, they may not feel the same way. They may not have the same moral standing that they have today. And therefore, according to Rav Yishuv Mekarcha, you go ahead and collect it. Good.
Paying a documented loan is a simcha that you would...
The Gemara over there in Avodah Zarah says that when you're paying any kind of debt, you become debt free, and that's reason to make a kiddush. That's the Gemara's language over there. Not exactly the way I expressed it, but that's the Gemara's language over there. They're gonna have that relief. That relief they're gonna have. They're gonna thank their gods. So that would be true regardless of how they become debt free, whether it was documented or undocumented. So the Chachamim over there says you can't collect any kind of loan from them proximate to their holiday. Rav Yishuv Mekarcha says undocumented loans, you take that money. You don't know if you're going to have another opportunity. It's fine. So we just went off on a small tangent over here in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, just to simply point out that had the Amora, sorry, let me give proper attribution, Rabbi Abba. Right, Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Huna. So they were sitting in front of Rav Yosef. Had they not said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yishuv Mekarcha, so we would have said, okay, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yishuv Mekarcha. He's a shitas yachid against the rabbim. Good.
How does that relate to what you're talking about here?
Totally unrelated. They're saying that there are two things that we need to publicly state as halacha. Why do they put these two together? I don't know. Why? But once they did, the Gemara records it.
What's the point of even pointing that out? Like, I'm not sure. Like, is it provide support that the halakha follows him sometimes?
I don't know. But that's what they said. El halachi Rav Yehuda Lamali machlokis v'achar kastam yishem umachlokis v'achar kastam halachi kastam. Okay, but the need for these amoraim. This is still now Rav Yosef turning to these amoraim, Rav Hun and Rabbi Abba, and saying to the two of them, you know, you're telling me the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, right, of our Mishnah. Now we're back here in Baba Kama, right? And what happens when the dyer deviates from instructions, and what now becomes? Are we going to slap him with a fine, that shita's Rabbi Yehuda, or is he koneh with shinui, shita's Rabbi Meir? So you're telling me the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Thank you, but no thank you. Meaning, you're right, but I didn't need your statement. Oh, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, great. We knew that already. Now, why do we know that already? It's so funny. For Rav Yosef, it's like so obvious. I'm not sure if it would be so obvious for the rest of us. But it's so funny, by the way. The Gemara Ben's point, by the way, I was thinking the same thing as well. And that is that generally speaking, when we have a machlok between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, so Rav Yehuda trumps Rav Meir, right? The Gemara is an Erevin that we went through that give us the Klalei HaPsak, And it's so funny, I was thinking the same thing as well. The Gemara is not going to make that point. The Gemara is going to make a different point. Okay, so then I'm with you. And I didn't see anyone discuss that, but I liked your thought. Okay, so the... So halachik Rabbi Yehuda lama li machlokas v'achakach stam. I read this. Umachlokas v'achakach stam halachik stam. Okay, now as far as Rabbi Yosef's point is concerned, he says, look, here's to me what is obvious, which is that we're learning Baba Kama right now. We're on Daf Kuf Aleph and Kuf Beis. Today's Kuf Beis, but in other words, the Mishnah was back on Daf Kuf Amud Beis. So over here we learned the Mishnah together, and it's a machlokas. Okay, now it happens to be that. If you go later in the Masechta, now I'm saying the Masechta. I don't really mean Baba Kama. But you'll see what I mean in just a moment. So Machlok is, Baba Kama, let's follow Adam, Vatsav, Shach, Shach, Vatsav, Adam, Rabbi Meir, Amen, Osel, and Demet Zimmer. Rabbi Yehuda, Amen, Yim, Shevach, Yosel, Yitzia, Nosel, Lo, Yitzia. V'ima, Yitzia, Yisir, Allah, Shevach, Nosel, Lo, Shevach. Stam, Baba Matzia. So what we just did is that we just simply reviewed our Mishnah. I'm not going to bother translating it, obviously. But in other words, but that's the Mishnah of Baba Kama. Now we're going to turn to another Mishnah, and that Mishnah is Bab Mitzia did none. And here is a Mishnah later in the Masechta in Bab Mitzia, Daf Ayin Vav. Kol HaMishani Yada to Allah Tachtona, V'chol HaChozer Bo, Yada Allah Tachtona. So anyone who deviates, so he's going to be in the backseat. He's going to have the lower hand. And anyone who retracts, meaning he contracted to work for the day, and halfway through the day he decides, you know what? Not interested in this job. So yeah, in either of those cases, either contractual labor or employment, hourly employment, either one of those where there is now going to be deviation or retraction, yadol tachtona, they're not in the driver's seat. Okay, when we get to that Mishnah, obviously we'll talk more about employment. But right now, the first statement of that Mishnah in Bab Mitzia is a shout out to Rabbi Yehuda. And over there, that Mishnah is an anonymous Mishnah. And what we're looking at over here structurally is Machlokis V'Acher Kach Stam. Okay. And that the idea is that obviously on numerous issues, so there's debate. Who does Allah Chafal like? So one of the tells of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi constructed the Mishnayos, so basically he had code. And now how do we decode? It's very simple. It's not so simple, but it's pretty simple. And that is that he'll introduce a machlokas in one Mishnah telling us, hey, it's a machlokas. But later in the Masechta, if he goes ahead and states a position anonymously, that's code of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi telling us that the anonymous Mishnah is in fact the accepted halacha. What the Gemara here describes as machlokas, the achar kach stam. That's the coding of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi when putting the Mishnahs together. Okay? Now,
so the machlok and the stam are not next to each other. They could be like far apart.
Okay, so Ben already is now touching on the topic, which effectively the Gemara is going to make, and that is, so when do we get to say this at machlok is v'achar kach stam, the halach is like the stam? Does it have to be found in the same masechta? Effectively, yes. Yes. Even if they're not proximate to one another. What if they're in two different masechtas? I tease the next Gemara. So what Rav Huna will counter and Rav Huna will tell you is, yeah, but the Mishnayos are not necessarily in any kind of order. In other words, that when Rav Yehuda Nasi put the Mishnayos together, he did so with not tremendous regard to what the order of those Mishnayos would be. And even though sequentially we have it as machlokas and afterwards it's a stam, maybe not. Maybe it's stam and afterwards it's a machlokas. So Rav Yosef's counter is very simple. So he hachi kol machlokas v'achakach stam nema in sedol mishnah. Ustam v'achakach machlokas he. So Rav Yosef's counter to Rav Huna is basically, that's a reductionist argument. Meaning, once you tell me that there's no order, so I no longer have a rule. So all you've done now is reduced it to the point of absurd, right? How do the academics say it? Reduction ad absurdum. Okay, so it doesn't matter. You've reduced the argument. So v'Rav Huna kilo armin and ain't said the mishnah bechad masechta ava b'chem masechta samrina. Okay, good. And so now the real counter of Rav Huna, meaning apparently we didn't understand Rav Huna properly. The real counter argument of Rav Huna is the following, and that is, I'm ready to buy into this topic of machlokes v'achar kach stam. I'm ready. However, now when it's in two different mesechtos, meaning the machlokes is found here in Baba Kama Daf Kof. Good. The stam mishnah is in Bab Mitzia Daf Ayin Vav. So Rav Huna is saying, look, I'm with you. There is coding of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, machlokes v'achar kach stam, in the same mesechta, not when they're in two different mesechtas. And Rav Yosef, and here we get to a big line here in Baba Kama, and Rav Yosef, kulin ezikin chara mesechtahi. The three babas are really all one mesechta. Beautiful. Meaning that I said this, I believe, on day one of the mesechta. At least I hope I did. But and I'm sure I've repeated on other occasions as well. And that is that once upon a time, there was this giant mesechta called Nezikin. Nezikin was made up of 30 prakim. And it was massive. It was huge. Now, it's not unprecedented, by the way. In other words, open up to the beginning of Seder, of Seder Taharos. And what are you going to find over there? This massive mesechta called Kalim. Kalim is made up of 30 prakim. So the idea that you have an opening mesechta in the Seder that's massive, we have that by Taharos. We have it over here by Nezikin. So what Rav Yosef now explains to Rav Huna is the following. It's not two different mesechtas, meaning what happens subsequently, don't know when, and it doesn't matter. In other words, clearly sometime between Rav Yehuda Nasi and Rav Huna and Rav Yosef, by the way, not a lot of time between the two, but at one point subsequently, what they did is they took this massive mesechta and they chopped it up into three equal parts. Baba Kama, 10 prakim. Baba Mitzia, 10 prakim. And correct. Baba Basra, 10 prakim. So they broke it up into three equal parts. But the truth of the matter is, once upon a time, there was all one mesechta. So now, is this machlokes v'achar kach stam? Absolutely. That's what Rav Yosef is teaching Rav Huna. Ibai seima mishum tiktana lagabi hilchasa psikta. And oh, by the way, even if that was not enough evidence, meaning I know that was, Kumar took a long time to make that point, but even if that wasn't enough evidence, in addition to that, I'm also going to point out that, look at that Stam Mishnah and Bab Mitzia, Anayin Vav. That Stam Mishnah has two points. One, about what happens when a contractor changes the orders and instructions that were given to him, meaning our topic. And on top of that, side by side, contiguous, is the next point, which is that if I have a day worker who backs out in the middle of the day, yado al tachtona, meaning he's no longer in the driver's seat. Again, when we get to that mission, we'll talk about the ramifications of an employee backing out of his contract, backing out of his daily contract. Anyway, but we'll get there. That's hilchasa psikta, meaning the second point over there is a non-negotiable, non-controversial point. So another way to tell us that the halacha is like Rabbi Huda, not like Rabbi Meir, is that what Rabbi Huda Nasi did is he took those two mishnayos and he put them back to back. He put them side by side. A non-controversial point right next to a controversial point. That's another tell, that's another tip of Rabbi Huda Nasi that the halacha in fact follows like Rabbi Huda. Okay, good. Tana Rabbanan. We're in the very bottom of Kud Beis Amud Aleph. And we spent the entirety of today's daf, basically, what we went off on a tangent regarding Peir Shvius, when is fruit and non-fruit growth subject to Peir Shvius, when is it not? Good. And what is the proper usage of Peir Shvius? Admittedly, a total tangent over here in Baba Kama, but fine. That's what we spent a little bit of this morning on. But the bulk of our morning so far we spent on, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. When I give a contracted laborer to do work for me, and he deviates, we passim like Rabbi Yehuda, yado tachton. He has not acquired the item. The item still belongs to me. And and what do I have to do? I just have to pay him for either expenses or for improvement, whichever is the lower of those two numbers. Good.
Isn't it right that you have to pay like the worker by the end of the day?
Correct. But in other words, when the worker... Right. Well, when we get to Bab Mitzia, we'll discuss in more detail. The worker backed out of his agreed terms. We'll talk more about it in Bab Mitzia. Another nice way of saying I have no recollection. But in other words, but that's also both points are true. Tana Rabbanan Nosei Malso Shlucha. Likach lo chitim, v'lakach lo lem sarim. Sarim v'lakach lem chitim. Okay. So now, here we go. Venture capital. What I do is that I give money to my partner. Okay. And we go on the following venture. And that is, it's a very complicated venture. Everyone ready? I'm going to tell them to buy wheat, buy it at a low price, sell it at a higher price. venture capital at its finest. So so I give money to my shliach likech lochitim, and I want him to buy wheat. We're on the top of Kuv Beis Amin Beis. And v'lakach mem sarim. And over here, we agreed what our business is going to be. Okay, we agreed. That's great. But now he goes off to market, right? He goes to the wholesale market, and he buys, and he decides, you know what? Right now, I feel we could do better with barley. And so he takes my money, which we're gonna split the profits. He takes my money, and what does he do? He buys barley with it. We agreed to wheat, or the alternative. So Tanya Chada in Pichsu Pichsu Lo. Imosiro Siro Lo. Vitanichada in Pichsu Pichsu Lo. Imosiro Siro Lo Emza. Okay. So we have two brises in terms of what are going to be the ramifications of deviating from the instructions. In brisa number one, effectively, once the shliach now has deviated, the shliach is now going solo. No longer is he a partner in this venture. He's totally on his own. In other words, that money that he deviated with is now effectively his money. Okay, I'm going to use strong language just to be able to clarify this point. He's a Goslin. Okay. And I'm not sure if I mean that with the full intent of the word Goslin, but it makes the point very clear. In other words, once he no longer goes with our agreed instructions of what we're going to do with the money effectively has become his. All profits, all losses are his. Obviously, he's going to have to make restitution of my investment. Brisa number two tells us a different story, which is no. So, im pichsu pichsu lo, meaning if there's loss, okay. In other words, he's going to have to suffer all the loss. He deviated. And on top of that, he lost, right? That's a loser two times over. And so the loss he's going to have to suffer. If, on the other hand, there is profit, so what we're going to do now is we're going to share the profit. Okay, good. So, not bad. So, I'm Rav Yochanan Lokasha, HaRebbe Meir, HaRebbe Yehuda, HaRebbe Meir Damar, Shinui Kone, HaRebbe Yehuda Damar, Shinui No Kone. So now, when given these two brisas, so what we want to try to do is we want to try to be able to process and organize these two brises. So Rav Yochanan says, I got it. Meaning, I'm looking at these two brises, and what do I see over there in those two brises? I see the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. It's great. It seems to work out fantastic. The brisa that says that all P&L goes to the shliach, so that brisa is a Rabbi Meir production. Meaning, that brisa tells us that once you deviate, you're kona with shinui. And so, therefore, it becomes yours. Obviously, you have to make full restitution of the money that was given to you. But in other words, because you deviated, now the money's yours. And so therefore, you're going to get all P&L. On the other hand, the other brisa that says that loss you're going to have to suffer, but profit you're going to have to share. So that's Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda tells you that when there is deviation, you have not acquired it. In fact, not only have you not acquired it, but a kenas, a penalty imposed. Now, in the case of dying, so what was the penalty? The penalty is that I'm going to take back my wool, and I'll pay you, but only shevach or hotzah, whichever number is less. Over here, obviously, you can't use that model of penalty, because I gave him money to make money. I gave him capital. So over here, the penalty will look like, if there's loss, that's going to be your loss. But if there's profit, we get to split the profit. Okay. That's Rav Yochanan's assessment and analysis of the two discrepancies regarding what happens now when the person with the money goes ahead and deviates from the instructions. Maskev lo Rav Elazar mi mai dama ad kan lo kama Rabbi Meir ela b'midi dechazil elagufei aval eschara lo amar. And so what Rav Elazar is going to do is he's going to push back on Rav Yochanan. I don't understand Rav Yochanan. I understand the Rav Meir, Rabbi Yehuda debate when it comes to wool. Where there, you have chazil elagufei. In other words, the wool is usable. In other words, we're talking about an entity, an item. But over here, we're talking about funds. Funds are fungible. In other words, we're talking about capital. So in other words, maybe capital's different. In other words, when I give money for somebody to go ahead and turn around and make money, do I really care how he makes the money? I'm investing simply so that I get a return. But in other words, but it may not be as critical what he does with the money. It may not be the same. So Elam Revelazar Havah Rabbi Meir Velokasha Kan Lachila Kan Lachora. Okay. So as far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, so he'll tell you that really no. Really both prices are subscribing to Shitas Rabbi Meir. They're both subscribing to Shitas Rabbi Meir, and the difference between the two prices is really simple. And that is, when I told them I'd go ahead and buy me the wheat, why? Why did I want wheat? If I told them to buy me wheat because that's what I want to eat, meaning I actually want the wheat, and he takes the money, he goes ahead and he buys barley. So that deviation over there, in other words, that's Mishana, that he's Kona the barley, and I'm going to get my money back. Okay. And but on the other hand, if it's L'schora, if it's for capital purposes, if it's for investment purposes, so then we'll say he's not Kona, meaning we'll just simply apply the other Braisa. Okay. Good. So that's Rav Elazar's presentation of the discrepancy between the two Braisas. So what do we have over here? We have a Braisa, and we have now two interpretations of the Braisa. The Braisa regarding capital venture, where I have the investor, and now the person who is handling the investment money goes ahead and deviates. So what do we say? One Braisa tells us he's acquired that money via his deviation. The second Braisa says he has not acquired that money via deviation. So Rav Yochanan says, it's a machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. It's what we've been discussing now since Daf Kuf. Kuf, Kuf Aleph, now today's Daf Kuf Beis. So it's the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. What do you do when that person deviates from the instructions that are given to him? Has he acquired? Has he not acquired? Rav Meir says he acquired. Rav Yehuda says he's not acquired. Same thing over here. That's Rav Yochanan. And Rav Elazar pushes back, not necessarily. It could very well be that both are Rebbe Meir, and it's just a question of, when we agreed to buy wheat, why did we agree to buy wheat? For eating or for investment? If it's for eating, that's a shinui. If it's for investment, less so. Okay, beautiful. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Machulah b'marava. We'll leave it to tomorrow too. How the reaction of these pshatim.